Well, they've braved the rain and they're here. We've got Dr. David Tabrett and Cheryl Shaw for Pet Chat. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Amanda.
Great to have you. Now, Cheryl, you want to talk about dog owners today.
Oh, look, this rain is really causing a lot of trouble for us dog owners.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the rain makes the dogs wee inside. So we're going to be talking about that and the cleaning up and what to do.
We do not like that.
No.
No, we do not. And Dr. David Tabrett, what are you going to talk about today?
Well, if we get some time, I've just been away at a conference and a very interesting listening to speakers on the topic of what age should you de-sex your pet?
Interesting. Is it controversial?
Always controversial.
We like a bit of controversy. Now, Cheryl, you want to talk about dog owners.
Yes. One of the things that we're going to be talking about today is we've got some rainy weather about. Now, if you've got a puppy, this is going to set back their puppy for toilet training. You'll find a lot of dogs just don't want to go out and get their feet wet. Now, a little thing you can do to help that at the moment, put a towel down every time the dog goes out and comes in. Make a really big fuss about wiping the dog's feet. This will help the dog to not go around and put wet paws all over your place, but also it'll stop the dog from licking at its feet, which can cause other problems with bacteria and yeast. But for those accidents that do happen inside, because even if you've got a dog that's well-trained, sometimes they'll go, it's raining, I'm not going outside. And the problem is, if they do urinate inside, most people go for something that is something like vinegar or some bleach or peroxide. You know, all sorts of people use different things. And I want to bust that a little bit today, because using something like a disinfectant, even though we think it's killing germs and bacteria, it's not going to take away the problem for you and your dog. So obviously urine smells, and particularly if you've had a dog that's weed in the house previously, as soon as there's a lot of moisture around or high humidity, you can actually smell that again if you're using things like vinegar. So we need to make sure that we're reducing the problem that's there with the urine. So what actually happens? To help understand it, urine is composed of three components. One is urea. Now, that's that sticky substance. When urine dries, it goes really sticky and tacky. The other one is the urochrome. Now, that's the colouring in the urine. So that's what causes the staining on your carpets and things like that. And the other is the urine salt crystals. Now, this is what bonds to the carpet and keeps the odour there. So if you've got a dog that goes outside and goes to the toilet, sometimes people will say, and I often hear this, they'll say, oh, my dog came back inside and it did go to the toilet outside, or maybe it didn't, but they've come inside and the dog urinates again where it's previously urinated. Now, the problem with this is that they haven't used an bioenzymatic cleaner. And this is really important, because that the enzymes actually grab hold of the crystals from the urine and they destroy it so that it's no longer there. So the dog, when they come inside, if urine hasn't been cleaned up properly, what they do, they smell the urine. So dogs have such great capacity in their nasal sponges. They smell this urine and then it triggers them to get the sponges, send a message to the olfactory. The olfactory tells the dog, urinate, so it wees in that same spot. So this is why it's so important to make sure you're cleaning up properly. The other thing is, sometimes people do use these products, but they don't use them properly. So using a product, if you think a dog has wee on the carpet and you think, oh yeah, I can see where that is, you need to make sure that you do a bigger area. So once you've blotted up the most of the moisture that you can with, you know, towel or paper towel, and then you've saturated with your proper cleanser, your bioenzymatic cleanser, you then need to do a bigger area than what you can see, because the urine will have gone down through the carpet, through the fibres, and across underneath.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, so underneath we've always got a felt or an undercover or underlay, and it will actually spread across. So usually it's about 3 to 4 times bigger than what you see.
Wow.
So this is where a lot of problems come in. People just only clean what they can surfacely see, but it's underneath. So making sure we do that is one of my suggestions for today.
That makes a lot of sense. Now we've got I should actually put the microphone on. We've got Janelle from Abernethy on the line. Hi, Janelle.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. How can we help?
I have a 4-year-old Chihuahua bitch who's just whelped.
Yep.
Last time she whelped, she ended up with milk fever. This time she's only got one pup. I'm just wondering, would it be not be advisable to keep up with the calcium supplement?
Yes. Now, calcium, I love calcium. Of all the elements in our body, I think it's the most fascinating. It's probably also the most complex. Okay. So just very quickly, you mentioned the word milk fever, and that might be confusing to a lot of people. But basically, that's an old layman's person's term applied to this problem that arises when they have low blood calcium levels.
Yep.
Okay. So very quickly, calcium is basically stored in the body as bone, okay? And there's also a store in muscle. There's a store in the blood. And there's a combination of hormones, including hormones that come from two little glands in our neck called the parathyroid glands. And then it also, also regulated through kidney function. And we absorb calcium from the gut. So you can see what I've just said, like this.
Yep.
We've got the gut, we've got the kidney, we've got hormonal problems, we've got bones. And then you come along and throw a puppy that just wants to suck the life out of the mother and drags the calcium out of the body. Now, if you're storing calcium in your bones and you've got a puppy feeding, it takes a while to get the calcium out of the bone into the bloodstream and into the milk.
Yep.
Okay, and that's why we get this problem where the blood calcium really drops quite rapidly, because the milk goes away very quickly to the pup, and the mother is pulling the calcium out of the bloodstream to put into the milk, but they're just not able to replace it as quickly. So the body will do what it can, but we need to provide a supplement. And so this is important even with one pup, this can happen, particularly in a smaller breed dog like a Chihuahua. It also depends on the diet that they've got. So if you've got, for instance, a meat-rich diet, which is actually high in phosphorus and low in calcium, you're almost guaranteed that you're going to cause problems.
Yep.
So we always want to have a balanced diet, first of all, okay? And calcium and phosphorus ratios, which are the things we look at, need to be controlled in the context of I've got a mother here that's feeding a pup. So a balanced diet, and most of your commercial foods are going to address that quite well. Some of them will be fortified if they're for breeding dogs.
Yep.
Okay. But importantly, it's particularly for small dogs, it's worth supplementing with calcium.
Yep.
There are different forms of calcium supplements, and that's kind of a whole nother topic. But basically the protein-bound forms like calcium gluconate or the sugar-bound are better than a calcium carbonate, which is basically just ground-up chalk. So we always go with those ones that are bound to a protein because they're absorbed a lot better. And they have measurements on the bottle that say, you know, for a 5-kilo dog, depending on their diet, you feed, you know, might be 2 mils. Whatever the number is, if it's a 10-kilo dog, you're going to give more, okay?
Oh, definitely.
So, yes, I would always do it with particularly for a smaller breed. And the reason why you said fever is because when they get signs of low blood calcium, they actually start to have tremors and seizures, and the muscle activity that goes on causes their body temperature to go up. And so they'll come in with a body temperature of, say, 42 degrees, when normally, you know, it should be 38, 39. So, yes. That's the long answer. The short answer is absolutely yes. Give a calcium supplementation.
Not a problem.
Thanks for your call, Janelle. Appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, next on the line, we've got Amanda from Elibana. Hi, Amanda. How can we help?
I'm well, thank you. And you? You're good.
Hi, Amanda.
My daughter has got a collie dog who's 6 months old, and she's just developed a red colouring around her mouth and leading up to her nose.
Yep.
And it's been there for about 2 weeks, and it's sort of ever so slightly getting worse, you know, each day sort of thing.
Is it just red colour, or is there any scale, like scabbing or anything forming over those areas?
No, it just seems like red colour, and she's not It's not on her paws. She's not licking her paws.
Yep.
But they've sort of read up a little bit on it. But I just thought I'd give you guys a ring because you're the experts.
Sure. Well, what sort of food bowls do they use? Are they metal or ceramic or plastic?
They've got both. They've got both.
So any plastic?
No plastic. I've seen her drinking out of metal and out of ceramic.
Hmm. The reason I ask is contact around the face there. I have seen dogs that, particularly with plastic bowls, can get that sort of thing, but it is possible with metal. Probably the safest is the ceramics.
Okay, yeah.
Because they've got an inert coating on them, so there's nothing that's leaching into the water or into the food.
Yeah.
The other thing is I'd be thinking about, first of all, any sort of allergy problem around that area that she's putting her face into.
Lots of things at the moment.
Of course, yeah. You mentioned her breed being a collie.
Yes.
And that's why I asked about the scale, because there are some autoimmune diseases which can cause problems around the face almost exactly as you're describing, but they become progressive. I'm not sure they really hit at this early age, but I wouldn't rule it out. Because some of those problems, you will need a biopsy to get them diagnosed, and then they're often on lifelong treatment. I would try and go with changing the bowls, certainly, to the ceramic. But if you notice any scale forming or the redness isn't going away just in, you know, a week, then I'd be getting off to the vet to make sure there's nothing else going on.
Yeah, okay. So it's been there probably for, you know, about 2 weeks. So it's probably time to get it looked at then.
Good
idea. Change the bowls, like you say, and then get it looked at.
Yeah.
And then another question is too, because I know you're about to talk about it, is they've been recommended by the vet to not have her de-sexed till she's 12 months.
Mm.
And they're getting married in September. So they're actually going to get her de-sexed sort of 2 months earlier. So she'll be 10 months because when they go away on their honeymoon, they don't want to leave someone with the possibility of, you know,
her coming on heat and so on.
And that would be really, not good for someone who's just looking after her to have to sort of deal with that. And the vet said, look, that would be fine because it's only 2 months shy of the 12 months.
Yeah. Yeah, look, this is, I kind of flag that it's quite a controversial area, and most of the research and information is reported on a population basis. So in certain breeds, you know, de-sexing at different ages may or may not carry certain risks, and we may get a chance to get into that a bit later on. I'm not sure I'm aware of anything with collies related to age.
Sorry, I might have said a collie. She's a border collie.
Border collie.
Yeah, she's a border collie.
Same group. So.
Same group, yeah.
Yeah, but...
something about maybe her hips or something. Did they say something like that?
Well, see, the thing, it doesn't really affect the hip dysplasia scenario because that's kind of baked in and almost, it's almost diagnosable at a very early age, you know, 3 months.
Right.
So, you know, by the time you get to 10 months, like, that's not going to increase the risk of hip dysplasia.
That'll make them feel a lot happier about it.
2 months early is fine.
Okay, perfect.
Thanks, Amanda.
Well, thanks so much.
Appreciate
your call.
Okay,
next on the line we've got Carmel from Lochinvar. Hi, Carmel. Thanks for holding. How can we help?
I'm just asking. Now, I've got a 15-year-old Jack Russell Cross Maltese, and in the mornings, and it's not every morning, but he gets really hot. It's like he has, like his ears get really hot and he throws up. It's like a gastric reflux, but it's just yellow bile. It's all clear. Now, he's on Asimax 10 milligrams, but, that's not doing anything. And the vet said she's never heard of anything like that. It's like a menopause. And the only, I don't know how to sort of, all we can do is just, like, try and keep him cool.
Sorry, what was the drug that you mentioned? I just missed that.
Asimax.
I'm not familiar with that
I think the generic brand is, or the... It's called omeprazole.
Yeah, right, okay.
Atomax is just another name for
it. Yeah, thank you. So that is a proton pump inhibitor, which reduces the production of gastric acid and, you know, to try and reduce the risk of damage to the upper gastrointestinal tract, the mouth, the esophagus and so on, from acid coming up with vomiting. You said male or female?
Yeah, he's a male.
Male, yeah.
Yeah,
and he gets hot ears.
Sorry?
He gets hot ears and vomits.
Yeah, really hot. Like, his whole body just gets really hot, sort of halfway through the night, probably 2 o'clock in the morning. And then once he's had his vomit, he'll come down again.
I've never heard of anything like this.
Yeah, that's what the vet said. She said she's never heard of it. Is it an old age thing, or is it just something
I mean, we've got to think about going back to first principles. Body temperature changes. I mean, there's what the actual body temperature is and then what it feels like on the outside.
Yeah.
So, for instance, you know, if you go for an exercise, you go to the gym or something, the blood goes out to your skin, you start to sweat, and your skin will actually increase in temperature.
Yeah, correct.
But your core body temperature really won't change that much.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why the blood goes to the skin, is to try and cool you down. But of course, the blood carries heat out.
Yeah.
Okay. So you feel hot. But so I'm just wondering if there's something happening with the distribution of blood flow rather than body temperature itself. And it's kind of hard to know, unless we walk around with a thermometer up your butt the whole day.
Yeah,
which won't be very pleasant.
I just feel sorry for him because it's been happening now the good last 12 months, and it's not every morning like he throws up, because we try and cool him down as soon as we can. But if we don't get him quick enough, so we're freezing cold at night time, and he's just, halfway through the night, he's just having this royal hottie.
Thing I would be thinking about is whether or not he's got some sort of malfunction or dysfunction with his thermostat in his brain.
Oh.
So the temperature control is through the hypothalamus in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And given the kind of fact that he's up at night and then the vomiting and temperature dysregulation we think that's going on, I just wonder if he may have some sort of organic brain disorder. If he was a person, and I mean, you can still get this done, but I'm just conscious that he's 15-year-old. But if he was a person, I might imagine that he would be getting an MRI done of his brain just to make sure there's not. I'm sure that if there was, I'd be looking for other symptoms of some sort of neurological disease.
Yeah.
So I've never heard of anything like this.
Yeah, that's what the vet said. She said she's never heard of anything. And I said, well, what do? He's been asleep. And then all of a sudden, come that early morning, he just, gets off the bed and has a chuck. I'm like, oh, why? His food's the same. It's not as if there's anything that's upset his tummy,
Yeah. I know you can get cooling jackets for people.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you can get anything for dogs like that.
Yeah, you can get cooling pads. So they're actually like a cooling gel, and they can lay on that. That actually does bring their temperatures down and makes them more comfortable.
Okay. All right. I'll try that.
Yeah, give that a shot. But I'm not sure. I'll ask around and find out if anyone's heard anything about this. So.
Yeah, it's just very odd. As I said, it's the last 12 months, And I'm just, the vets just said to me they don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, there must be something for him to be, making him crook. And I just, I feel sorry for the pile bugger.
Hopefully if we can get him cooled down a bit, and the medication may settle his stomach as well. But omeprazole long term, I should just add, can actually increase the risk of gastritis.
Okay.
So because you're increasing the pH, which is lowering the acid level, the acid level actually fights off bacteria. So if we use medication to lower the acid, it could lead to developing gastritis.
Okay. So what do you suggest, taking him off it?
Well, no, I would speak to your vet about that. There is some anti-vomiting medication that might be more suitable.
Like the ondansetron or something like that?
Yeah, the problem is getting it to him in a time frame that's going to be helpful.
Oh, okay.
Because it's rather short-acting.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So,
All right, Warren, no problem.
No worries. Thanks for the call. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thanks. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM. We're very busy today and we've got Jenny from Fern Bay on the line. Hi, Jenny. Thanks for holding.
Oh, that's okay.
How can we help you?
This is a behavioural problem, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've got a friend, believe it or not. she lives over at Wall's End. She's got a toy poodle.
Yep.
Okay. Now, he's about 4 years old.
Yep.
I've got my own dog who is 6 years old. And in the last 6 weeks, I've gone into her house and he's between me and his owner, he'll do a big wee wherever he is, on the floor, on the couch thing. It's just, it's very unusual for him.
Have you got your dog with you?
Yeah, she usually runs in and they play together. They're fine. They run around and blah, 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 blah. But it seems as though he's protecting his mum.
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange way to protect her.
Yeah.
Yes, so. I think it's probably more a stress or an overexcitement.
Yeah, he looks like he was up with me. He was on the lounge chair the other day. And, oh, hello, Peppy, and blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, he's piddling.
Yeah.
What, overexcitement?
Overexcitement, Jenny. He's just so happy to see you. I'd be asking his mum before you arrive to take him out to go to the toilet so that when you come in, he's so excited to see you that may reduce the size of that wee he's going to do. Yep. But I think he's still just very excited to see you, and that's one of his ways. Sometimes some dogs can feel a little bit threatened too when there's another dog coming into their home, and sometimes they can territory mark as well. But I just think he's really excited to see you. So Peppy's response is to urinate. Happy to see you.
Yeah, well, we were standing out in the door outside one day and she was saying goodbye. He just lifted his leg and big piddle.
Oh, dear.
He didn't want you to go. just a quick question then. Now, is he de-sexed, Peppy?
Yes.
And does he have this urinating behaviour any other time that your friend tells you about?
Oh, she doesn't tell me, and I don't think she'd want to tell me. Put it this way, I don't like walking on her carpet with bare feet.
Oh, okay. You might need some of that cleaner that Cheryl was talking about at the top of the hour. But if you do go over there and clean your friend's carpet, just remember you have to cover an area about three times the size of where you think it might be, which sounds like the whole floor.
He didn't get properly toilet trained either, because my friend, she sleeps a lot because she has restless legs and blah, 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 blah. So he didn't get trained a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, but
when we come home the other day, he'd done a poo-poo in the lounge room.
Oh, dear.
He needs some more outdoor time.
Mm. Yeah, he doesn't get much outdoor time.
Yeah. And this is what Cheryl was saying. It's the weather as well is going to complicate things. So you may need to just not visit for a little bit until it dries up.
What dries up?
Well, outside and inside, I'd say.
We could be home for it.
It feels like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Thanks for your call, Jenny. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. 2NURFM 103.7. Good times. Great music. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM. And we're going to check the Pet of the Week. We had these ones last week, but we got so busy we didn't get to talk about them. So we're going to talk about them now. We've got Chuck, who's a 10-year-old bull mastiff. Has a heart as big as his paws and a soul as gentle as his eyes.
He has been in long-term care, so really looking for a place to settle down.
He has. He'll capture your heart with his devotion and quiet companionship. He's extraordinary in the ways that truly matter, a steadfast, low-maintenance buddy who will always be there when you need comfort, company, or just someone to sit quietly by your side.
One thing I like, Amanda, is that Chuck has been described as having an independent soul, So he doesn't need someone there all the time, but he does like to receive all the attention when you are there.
So no other dogs.
Yeah.
And he thrives on a strict raw food diet that keeps his allergies in check. So whether you're a full-time worker or work shifts, Chuck's independent nature makes him a perfect fit for your schedule. There you go. And he's in foster care at Fletcher at the moment. So you can find out more about Chuck on our webpage. Next, we've got Goose. And Goose is a cat, a six-month-old, handsome young man who is looking for his forever home.
I think Goose is going to find a home pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Mainly because I like his name.
Goose. Maybe someone was a fan of Top Gun.
Yes. Yeah.
Possibly.
We do love Goose. And yeah. Goose loves to play, lots of playing, tumbling around and exploring. So he'll find a way, though, to snuggle up and cuddle when you might be sitting on the lounge.
Yep. He also would do well on his own if he's given plenty of attention and play time, or he can have another cat around at this stage, or a dog. So, yeah, Goose is good with anyone.
Just like his namesake.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, you can check out both Goose and Chuck on our 2NURFM website, 2NURFM.com.au, in the Pet Chat section. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM, and we've been talking about dissexing. Mm. And, David, do you want to continue with that?
We did. Amanda actually asked the question earlier.
Not me, but another Amanda.
No, the other Amanda from Elibana. So, yes, very topical. Last week I was down at the Australian Veterinary Association National Meeting in Sydney, and a number of vets from the Hunter were down there I ran into, which was great. One of the talks that I went to was a behaviour specialist from, I'll get it wrong, it's either Spain or Italy, please forgive me, Jarma.
European specialist, there you go.
Professional over here. And very interesting because, you know, I work in emergency. I'm not really involved in a lot of the general practice elements day to day. But I'm constantly aware that, you know, we're concerned about desexing our pets. And there's emerging evidence, and there has been for a while, that early age desexing does carry some risks. Late desexing carries some risks too, by the way. So let's keep these things in balance. But he was presenting in this lecture that parts that relate to whether it's breed, so certain breeds that they're fine to desex earlier, some breeds we can actually increase the risk of things like orthopaedic disease, degenerative, joint disease. There's also some emerging evidence that has not yet been fully teased out around increasing risks of cancer in some breeds. Now, to be fair, I think some of these breeds are at increased risk of cancer regardless of desexing. But I think there's a mechanism that we did not understand before, and now there's evidence of some of the reproductive hormones that are produced from our brain actually can have an effect on certain cells in the body that will likely lead to cancer. So, as I said, a lot of that is still very unknown, but the orthopaedic disease is one that we have known about for a while. Now, where I think this gets really controversial is that there are other researchers who say that, you know, the design of some of these studies don't really fit what's needed to tell us that information, or the analysis is overdrawn. I guess we just need to continue research and look at this problem from multiple areas, because we have an obligation as pet owners under law to desex our pets, and the registration fees, lifetime registration, is different for desexed or non-desexed, and that kicks in at 6 months of age.
Right.
So we got this problem with age of desexing matching up against some of these registration concerns.
Well, it's complicated, and we're out of time.
There you go.
So pretty much just desex between ballpark?
Went with consultation with your veterinarian.
There you go. That's your answer. And congratulations to Jenny. You've won the $50 pet food voucher today. We're out of time. This is 2NURFM 103.7.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.